With his 2015-2017 state budget proposal, Governor Scott Walker would overthrow Wisconsin's traditions of fair rules and effective services. The Madison Institute believes such changes deserve the attention of a well-informed citizenry, so we sponsored a series of four progressive roundtables to discuss the realities of the situation. We invited knowledgeable panelists and opportunities for discussion. The four areas include K-12 public education, the University of Wisconsin system, social services, and natural resources. Today's topic is the University of Wisconsin system. Our panelists include John Sharpless, professor of history at the UW-Madison, Charity Schmidt with the Teaching Assistants Association at UW-Madison, Mark Miller, state senator of Wisconsin, Lee Hansen, professor emeritus at UW-Madison Department of Economics, and Joe Miller, director of Education Approval Board, which oversees for-profit universities and colleges in Wisconsin. Talk was moderated by Fred Wade, a Madison Institute board member. This talk was held on March 14, 2015, at the Madison Central Library in downtown Madison, Wisconsin. There are also downloadable handouts at our website at themadisoninstitute.org. The famous Sifting and Winnowing plaque is prominently displayed at the entrance of Bascom Hall on the UW-Madison campus. The quote was taken from a report of the Board of Regents in 1894. It is read here by Mr. Norman Stockwell.
Whatever may be the limitations which trammel inquiry elsewhere, we believe that the great State University of Wisconsin should ever encourage that continual and fearless sifting and winnowing by which alone the truth can be found.
Next, Charity Schmidt, Teaching Assistants Association at UW-Madison.
To start, I want to take everyone back to 2011 for just a moment. The beginning of the uprising, especially in those early first days, think about the signs that you saw. What was the topic of those signs? It was all about education and loving UW. So the main sign was, I heart UW. You saw other signs that read things like, can the governor teach organic chemistry? If you can read this, thank a teacher. And of course, signs like, you can't kill the Wisconsin idea. So fast forward 4 years now to 2015, and what does the governor actually attempt to do to kill the Wisconsin idea? So when the budget was released in those late hours of the night, Center for Media and Democracy was first to break the story that the governor and his team was literally taking out the language of the Wisconsin idea, the search for truth, out of the state statute. Not only that, but the purpose of the university being for the improvement of the human condition. So literally removing those from state statutes was what they were attempting to do with this budget, right, a fiscal budget. And I take you back there and bring this up to start today because I think this all needs to be understood in this larger context of the attack that we're under. This really is an ideological attack being waged by mostly outside interests against everything that we hold dear, against the fabric of the public good, essentially. So I want to understand this budget in that context, the budget and then the proposed public authority. They really need to be understood in terms of this larger attack that is happening nationally against public education, against public services. So I'm just going to highlight a couple things that I think is important about the budget to make sure we understand without attempting to not repeat what my fellow panelists have said and will say. So I'll just point out a few things. They'll talk a lot more about tuition than I will, but I'll just say a reminder that this also hits graduate students pretty hard. There's also a proposal, there's already a proposal to increase tuition remission surcharges for project assistants and research assistants. This will likely mean less graduate student positions in the university. It'll be harder to fund graduate students on grants. So we're already seeing that at UW-Madison. And we're uncertain with a lower budget how that will affect teaching assistants who are the front lines of education on the UW campus. We teach more than half of the classes on campus. And if you look at discussion in labs, we teach more than 90% of the classes on campus. So we really need to look at how this affects graduate students. The proposed budget will also force, of course, the poorest families to pay disproportionately for the university. Part of the proposal is to actually, after 2017, base the state's funding of the university system on sales tax. We all know this is a regressive tax that will hurt working families hardest. So basically, changing from a publicly supported system to one that's based and depends on sales tax, again, is another way to hurt working families in Wisconsin's pockets. The university will no longer be required to recruit minority and disadvantaged students, working class, first generation, so not only students of color, but working class students. And whereas one of my fellow panelists had mentioned, well, perhaps this is somewhere we can cut, I think we have to look at the larger context of our community and already look at the ways that we've failed our youth in bridging the racial divide in Madison and think about the ways in which this actually will make it worse and will make it harder to really build community in Madison with young folk. The university system will no longer be required to provide orientation information about sexual assault and harassment. This comes at a time when we, the UW-Madison campus and one other campus in Wisconsin, has been added to a federal investigation of sexual assault on campus. So we now, with 101 other universities across the nation, are part of this investigation. And yet, this proposed budget will actually take the training out of our orientation programs on campus. And again, this is all part of a budget proposal. These are not budget issues. Also, the budget gives the regents the power to close educational programs and areas of study of their choosing. A couple years ago, maybe 2012, 2013, remember places like the Center for Investigative Journalism was under attack. So we really have to think about the ways that this will affect programs that we hold dear, programs that may not be as easily commodified, the humanities and the social sciences. You know, you actually look at, even if we want to take the workforce development angle, what companies and employers actually want is citizens who have an education in language and the arts, a liberal education, they call it. So, you know, even if we're taking the governor's stance at face value, this is actually not good for employment and workforce development either. And of course, the university will become more beholden to the interests of the private sector. So not only through the public authority, but also through the Board of Regents and who will sit on our Board of Regents and be making all these decisions. The proposed budget degrades workers' rights for faculty, academic staff, and classified employees. So the university's, the Board of Regents will no longer be beholden to keeping shared governance in our system. So they could get rid of shared governance, which is the way that workers on our campus have a voice. We also must remember that this comes, and this is a little bit harder to describe or to articulate, but this is posed as a deal. So the university, we must also remember some of these conservative trends of trying to change the workforce at the university does come directly from university administrators. They have been asking for these quote-unquote flexibilities for years now. If you remember Biddy Martin, our former chancellor, and her attempt to pass through a new Badger partnership for the UW-Madison and split the UW-Madison from the rest of the system, part of that was to get these flexibilities. These flexibilities to institute merit pay, that means more inequity on our campus as to how people are paid and the labor rights that they receive. They will no longer be required to permit employees to accumulate sick leave. It also allows for them to, again, change their pay plan or have more flexibility in their pay plan. So this could lead to more things like contracting out workforces, meaning we might see less and less state employees in the university system and more private employees. And if you want to think about the UW system as one of the biggest state employers, you should find that pretty problematic. Problematic also because of the rights of those workers and the livelihood, being able to work a job that pays a living wage, to raise a family, and then have your children actually go to this campus. That kind of dream, that kind of pipeline to making it will no longer be, I mean, that's not going to be a part of Wisconsin for working families. I should also mention, as I think others will, that we're seeing a lot of actions against this budget and against the public authority, or at least pauses against the public authority, from all over. So not only has the TAA, the Teaching Assistants Association at UW-Madison, the Graduate Student Union, come out against the budget and the public authority immediately, Faculty Senate has also stopped and said, wait a minute, we don't know what this public authority looks like. We really need a board to look at this and understand what these changes will be. And they also came out directly against the budget cuts. They're too drastic. Academic Staff Senate, same thing. As we've seen, some of our conservative surprise allies have come out against this. Voss says that the cuts are too drastic, and perhaps the public authority is also too drastic. So when we have people like Voss, who are in one vein telling teachers they need to work harder, and in another vein actually is allying with us. And also the Board of Regents has finally, because of the public pressure, been able to step up and say, wait a minute, maybe these cuts are too much. Maybe this public authority is too drastic of changes for our UW system. We just wanted a couple of flexibilities, but now you're giving this complete package. So we're already seeing the UW-Madison Chancellor talk about layoffs for staff. We're seeing in Eau Claire, they're offering 20 buyouts that includes tenured faculty for 25% of their workforce. So we're going to see a lot of changes, but hopefully we'll see a lot of opposition. Again, these are all the things that I mentioned are not fiscal responsibilities of the university. This goes beyond it, and this is part of an ideological battle. So I'm happy that all of you are here today, and we're talking about this and discussing this so that we can raise the public discourse around it, because that's what we really need to do. So thank you.
Next, we hear from John Sharpless.
I'm simply worried that there, the system, if it was a standalone, separate system, that there would be sufficient public access to how they made their decisions. Remember, the regents are appointed by the governor. There's no direct public input into the management of those campuses. I know we've been frustrated by the legislature's oversight, but at the very least, they have to report back to the public. And I will tell you, even though our chancellor and the regents are in favor of a semi-independent university system, many faculty across the system are suspicious. We need a commission to study this. It needs to be a standalone bill. It needs to go to a statewide referendum, and it has to be part of the Constitution so the legislature at its whim cannot reverse that decision. Thank you.
Next, Mark Miller, State Senator of Wisconsin.
Over the past 50 years, state support for the university system has decreased from covering 90% of the core educational cost to only 40% of the core budget. In the last 13 years, the UW system has been cut a total of $565 million in state funding. This cut includes the $250 million cut in the 2011-2013 budget. So the amount of state support for the UW system received today has not been this low since 1998, and that's not even accounting for inflation. That's in constant dollars. Now, one of the things that will be I struggled with in preparing these remarks is whether to talk about a biennium, which is a budget, or to talk about an annual. And I thought it was probably safer for me to be able to use the biannual budget numbers that the Fiscal Bureau puts out so that if there's anybody fact-checking what I have to say, they'll be able to find those very same numbers. Otherwise, I would have to do some interpolation to try to show it on an annual basis. Just a brief view of what the UW system consists of. Over 20 campuses around the state, some two-year colleges, approximately 180,000 students being served on an annual basis. Their annual budget, this is the annual budget, is $6 billion. That would be $12 billion on a biannual basis. State funding on an annual basis is $1.2 billion. The economic impact of the universities, when you figure in the economic activity that's generated by the university and the resources it brings to the economy of the state, is $15 billion annually. And the university system as a whole awards more than 36,000 degrees. As Fred indicated, in recent budgets, in the 2011-2013 budget, we saw a $250 million cut in base funding. The base funding cut is something that stays in there eternally until the base funding is changed. So a cut in the base funding is a very severe cut because it remains forever. And that's what the $300 million that we've heard talking about is, a cut in base funding. The budget also includes a provision that the tuition freeze for undergraduate students, which has been in effect for the last two school years, it will be in effect for yet another school year, but that tuition freeze will end in 2017. And also requires UW system to spend $112 million of its reserve funds. The prior budget required that the university spend a substantial portion of its reserve funds, to the point where the actual flexibility the university has in being able to divert, to move funds to cover expenses that might be higher in one area or lower in another area, has been severely compromised, because many of those reserve funds are reserve because there was a special purpose that was designed for those. Either it was a construction project, it was a federal fund, it was a grant, for which those funds could only be kept for that specific purpose. The current budget proposal does the $300 million cut. Now, that's a $200 million cut over the 2 years, makes the UW system a public authority, imposes the two-year tuition freeze, and it cuts the rate of state funding for a number of agencies, but one of the ones that has gotten a lot of attention is Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. Talked about the tuition freeze. After the tuition freeze is lifted, it's uncertain what will happen. There's currently no restrictions on tuition raises after the authority goes into effect, but there's really no guarantee, so it's kind of an unanswered question. Now, the information that I provided you earlier was from the presentation on Thursday. This is from the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus only. And Madison, of course, as you know, is the largest campus in the system and the one that has the most prestige in terms of the research and what it brings to the state of Wisconsin. This slide shows where the funding comes from for the Madison campus. A substantial portion, 23% plus 8% in federal financial aid to students, is the largest segment of the pie. Gifts takes up 14%, state revenue a mere 17%, and tuition and fees take up another 17%. So that is how the revenue for the state, for the university, is distributed. And you can see the state actually is a pretty small section of that entire pie. Tuition is higher, federal aid is higher. This is shows in graphic form the decrease in state funding, which is the red line on this chart. And this is a percentage of funding for the university. You can see the percentage of funding coming from the state has continued to decline steadily since 1976 until now. There was a brief upturn in the last budget, but that's going to plummet again if the current proposal, $300 million cut, is adopted. Where the university ranks among Big Ten universities in terms of the resident tuition and also non-resident tuition. You can see there's quite a disparity. At the top of the chart is Penn State University with a $17,500 undergraduate resident tuition. They're the most expensive. At the bottom is University of Nebraska with $8,000. And then there is a group that are around $13,000. And below that is a group of $10,000. The University of Wisconsin-Madison is in that group, ranked seven amongst the 13 universities listed here of Big Ten universities. So our current undergraduate tuition is right in the middle of Big Ten universities. There was quite a controversy several years back about the amount of the reserve funds that the University of Wisconsin system had. And this is a chart showing what those reserve funds were for the Madison campus. I didn't want to compare systems to systems because not all states have systems like we have. So this is institution to institution. And it really varies a lot. But at the bottom of this, there's a number of big state 10 universities that are ranked above UW-Madison. You can see that UW-Madison has actually a very narrow, a small reserve fund. And this is what's left over after they were forced by the legislature and the governor to spend down their reserve funds to where this is sort of hardcore. They can't spend this, really, because it's committed for other purposes. Some have suggested that the university could be more efficient. Here's an indication of how the university's administrative overhead compares to their peer in the Big Ten and other universities, and also all degree-granting universities. So you can see the University of Wisconsin administrative overhead is really quite economical. I'm going to just go through some of the things that haven't gotten attention. We talked about Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television, but there's other items in there that, in addition to this $300 million cut, amounts to $12 million of funding for various programs within the university. The first one is the aquaculture demonstration facility funding. That's $417,000. It comes out of program revenue. Program revenue basically means something that the institution earns for its to pay for this particular resource. With the Wisconsin Environmental Education Board and Grant Program, this is out of the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point. It provides educational grants to schools and nature centers around the state to promote environmental education to school children and to adults. The Aldo Leopold Nature Center in Monona has been a frequent recipient of those grant programs, and they have done a lot to get school children out into the woods and to learn more about the environment. And the funding for that comes from the Conservation Fund and the Forestry Fund, which is segregated revenue that it comes from the sale of forest products that are on state lands. The next one should be the Oneida programming at UW-Green Bay. This is partially supported by the federal government and by tribal gaming, and it was a program to encourage Oneida youth to be able to learn their language and customs. That has been eliminated. The Center for Cooperatives is a resource for agriculture cooperatives and other kinds of cooperatives to be able to manage their business activities with some professional help. The Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative, this is a multi-university project with a substantial amount of federal funds. The Wisconsin component comes largely from the Environmental Fund, which is a fund designed for basically improving clean air, clean water. It's designed for that specific purpose. It includes federal funding, includes some borrowing. So it's all that, those multiple sources are put into a separate fund called the Environmental Fund. The Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative, which is $8 million, but only a small portion of that is from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The rest comes from federal and other sources. The Solid Waste Research and Recycling Education Council is a small extension program on the university that helps small businesses be able to learn how to manage their waste streams more efficiently so that less goes in the landfill, that more gets recycled and reused. That's been eliminated completely. The Rural Physician Residency, Dentist, and Medical Loan Assistance Program, that funding comes largely from the Critical Access Hospital Fund and from the tribes. This is designed to try to encourage residents to locate in rural areas of the state of Wisconsin, both dentists, physicians, as well as other physician assistants. The Fertilizer Research Program and the fees associated with it, this program is designed to help farmers know how best to manage the nutrients on the soil. It is funded entirely by fees charged on fertilizer sales, so there is no impact on the general purpose revenue, the tax revenue, because it's a completely self-funded program and it's being eliminated. I oftentimes wonder how the governor is going to respond if he's asked in Iowa why he's cut all these farm programs. Here are some of the organizations that have been transferred from the UW system. Their functions have not been eliminated, but they have been transferred to other state agencies. One is the State Lab of Hygiene, is going to the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, as is the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. It's hard for me to trace the funding on this transfer because you got to look at so many different places. I wasn't able to actually see how the funding and the personnel are moving. Are they all moving? Is portion of it moving? But this is one of the changes. And the Psychiatric Institute is moving to Department of Administration. Here is a list of some of the non-fiscal changes. There's going to be redefinition of what of academic staff and faculty staff. That would allow for current faculty to be redesignated as academic staff. But the exact details are not known. Whistleblower protection has been eliminated for the university. I think this is a function of creating a public authority to grant the public authority more independence and not be as micromanaged by the state government. It deletes the shared governance requirement of students and faculty, something that has been a long tradition in the University of Wisconsin-Madison, but again, I think this is the function of creating the independent authority. Oh, there's an organization called the Groundwater Coordinating Council, which consists of some of the scientists from the university and the DNR, which makes recommendations on how the DNR should disperse some of its clean water and its groundwater funds for research. That organization is no longer in the loop in terms, and it provided the technical expertise so that those funds were well used. Eliminates the cap on the aggregate amount of the UW non-resident tuition. As I indicated earlier, it retains the tuition freeze through the 2015-2016 year. And of interest, because is that declares that research records for the university are not subject to the open records law, which the university has. It's been an ongoing question as whether or not those records, because it's a state agency, should be open to the open records. But this makes the current budget, if it passes in this form, will say they are not subject to the open government. Now, this is sort of a summary. What you see is the total amount over the 2 years of funding changes to the university. The GPR is reduced by $297 million. That's where the $300 million comes from. That's a 13% cut in state funding. And there are 18,432 positions that are funded from that funding. Now, the Fed funding, this is money, as I said it before, the biggest chunk of the pie for the university comes from the federal government. After the 2015-2016 year, in the second year of the biennium, all that funding goes off the books for the state of Wisconsin. And, oh, I shouldn't say all of it, but a large portion of that comes off the books for the state of Wisconsin, goes directly to the university. It doesn't go through Department of Administration and then to the university. So we're going to see a significant reduction in the funding from on the state budget, because it'll no longer be on the books. It'll be separate because it goes directly to the authority. This is also true for some of the funding that's called PR, stands for program revenue, and also for some of the segregated revenue. Amount of that will no longer show up in the books is indicated here for a total of $5.1 billion. So what this does is it gives the governor a opportunity to boast about shrinking government, because he'll be able to say the number of current state employees in the state of Wisconsin is 70,000. Half of those are university system employees. So as a result of this budget, the governor will be able to claim that he shrank state government workforce by 50%. He will be able to show that he's reduced spending for the university by $2.6 billion, which is $5.1 billion came from the university. The $5.1 billion, as you can see, that the budget proposal for the university at $6.9 billion on a biannual basis, that is all funds. That's federal, state, program revenue, and segregated revenue. By being able to take that big chunk off the state books, the governor will be able to claim that he has shrunk state government. By being able to take half the state employees off the state books, they'll be able to claim that he shrunk state government. So this is something that's not really, I think, been discussed in the press or amongst people who are opposed to University of Wisconsin shrinking its going to a public authority. But I think it's something that anybody who's running for president would love to be able to champion, this kind of a fiscal responsibility for the state of Wisconsin. Now, a lot of the information I provide you comes from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. They have a approximately 490-page book, which is the Legislative Fiscal Bureau summary. This is by far the easiest thing to read when trying to understand what's going on in the state budget. The budget document itself is almost 1,000 pages, very hard to read and understand because it refers back and forth with all kinds of things. This is the document that if you want to learn more, you should go and look up. It's available online. You can find it by Googling up LFB space WI, that's Legislative Fiscal Bureau, abbreviation, WI for Wisconsin, and Google will come put it right at the top of the page. And then you can go on there and look at whatever it is that you're interested in. Thank you for your patience in following through, and hopefully you were able to gain the information that I've passed on to you.
Next, Joe Miller, the Director of the Education Approval Board in Wisconsin.
You know, when you talk about the elimination of what's happening at the university, it hit a lot of people. But what a lot of people didn't realize, there's always a flip side of what the governor is trying to do, and you had to look a little bit deeper. So that looked at what was happening with what we call proprietary schools, the for-profit educational system of colleges and small mom and pops that want to educate students. And the EAB, the Educational Approval Board, has been the independent oversight agency and since, I think it started back in regarding the GI Bill in the 1950s, because at that time there were a lot of people that wanted to take advantage of educating the GIs, and organizations and schools were popping up left and right. While the EAB was first appointed and set up to operate that. Since then, the proliferation of for-profit schools, and I mean the University of Phoenix's, the Argosy's, the Everett's, the Corinthian schools, you probably have no idea how they proliferated, and they will continue to proliferate. The only difference is that since that time, the EAB has to approve their curriculum, their enrollment, their faculty, and all of their regulatory issues that have to become. The governor is proposing to eliminate the whole agency. And I'm, as a board member, we went on record on February 20th because the board is totally appointed by the governor. I am the only appointee at the moment that I was appointed by Doyle, and I have not been removed by Governor Walker for a variety of reasons, I'm sure, but I serve on that board. And we, all five of us at this moment, went on record saying this is a bad proposal. Because what it's going to do, and the reason the governor said he was taking away all of the agency, is that we were a fiscal burden. The agency takes no funds at all from GPR. It is totally funded by the fees we impose on those private institutions. We will now become the only state in the union that will have no oversight for proprietary education. Currently, we are number one in the regulation and the student protection against proprietary schools. I asked the governor, we are number one in nothing. Why would you want to take away this and become a zero? No response. So there are just all kinds of issues regarding public education, but the cost and the impact of what will happen when the university is changed completely is you need to look at who's going to benefit. We know now online degree programs, the EAB looks at. There will be nobody looking at online. You will have no idea what you're getting for your money. And so I think as you talk to other people, particularly students, they need to be told that to look very carefully that what school they attend, why they're attending, what will come of those degrees. I know my degree from the University of Wisconsin is held in high esteem. But a degree, a nursing program from Argosy, University of Phoenix, Corinthian, that's online, who will hire them? But they now have debt of $56,000 of getting that degree. So be very aware and this is one of the reasons, because I know that you will go out and start to talk to other people and ask them, did you know this was happening? You need to write to your legislators. And we're beginning to make an impact, because this is a huge problem for the university, as well as the other students who don't have access to it. So I have more questions. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. There's just a ton of material out there. Check the EAB website. We have position papers. We're beginning to make a few inroads with our legislators, but we need more support from the public. So thank you very much.
Next, we hear from Lee Hansen.
I would like to reiterate John's point about the inclusion of major policy issues in the budget. And as I recall, the Constitution prevents that, but yet the Supreme Court some years ago ruled that it was okay. And it's a terrible tragedy because it lets everybody hide behind one vote rather than voting individually on very important policy issues. So that goes far beyond the subject of the debate, but I think is one of the major tragedies in the evolution of the politics in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I don't know that the court has ever said it's okay to have policy in the policy proposals in the budget. It's something that's always been done. The court has said that the governor's veto power can be used to delete policy items if they want, and they've kind of admonished the legislature that they ought to, separate the policy from the fiscal items. But I think the process permits the legislature to do it if it wants to. And Mark, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think a policy change of this magnitude, I concur with Professor Charplis that it should be done independent of the budget. This is much too big a change, and the creation of a blue ribbon panel to make this kind of change would be, I think, a way to allow the citizens, the university, the legislature, and the governor's office to be able to make a rational decision, or one that would have more of a chance of benefiting all the people of the state of Wisconsin. I'm, of course, a huge fan of the university. I think it is the economic engine for the state. And it not only it has a lot of spinoffs in the economy, but also in the general social welfare of the state. It educates people to be good citizens. It encourages critical thinking. It provides that kind of critical thinking to go out into the business sector. Many business leaders have said that the one of the biggest skills they are looking for is not just technical skill, but also the appreciation for the history and the culture of not only the majority culture, but also the minority culture, of which we are now a multiracial society. And the university is a place that can provide that kind of thoughtful, broad-based research, intellectual thought that is unparalleled in anybody's life. I think most of us look at our time at the university as one of the best times for intellectual stimulation, and we carry those lessons and experiences forward with us for the rest of our life.
Mark, I'd like to ask you something quickly. I know that when the governor introduced this in his speech to the legislature, he promised that the sales tax would be allocated to the university when public authority became the law of the state. Did he promise the whole of the sales tax or a portion of the sales tax?
There's not language for it in the budget that I know of. So either I've missed it or it's not there.
I would I hate to bring this up because I know that we live in a state where whether things are constitutional is largely irrelevant. Can the legislature cede its power to control the flow of tax funds to a semi-independent institution?
That would require a study by a Blue Ribbon Committee to be able to decide.
The money automatically went to the regents of the University of Wisconsin and it completely bypassed the legislature, I suspect that's unconstitutional.
Actually, the state funding would go through the legislature.
So then it's no promise at all. Because they could decide to turn it off any moment they want.
But the federal funding, some of the program revenue, some of the segregated revenue would be going straight to the university and not go through the books of the state. But we would every biennium allocate funding for the University of Wisconsin system. Does that answer your question?
I don't know how this would work. See, one of the things that concerns me here is to be biblical, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Right now, Governor Walker seems to be very generous with public authority, and I know that there's some people in the system would like to see that. I do know there's dissent on that in the legislature, even among Republicans, that they are suspicious about what a public authority would be. And I could see a future legislature changing their mind and taking this all back at some whim. And unless it's bedded in the Constitution, that will happen.
I agree with you, Professor Sharpless, is that if it's granted by the legislature, it can be taken away by the legislature.
Okay, I just wanted to respond to one of your points about education being a huge function of our education being about creating engaged citizens and critical thinkers. So just to bring in a very specific example, one of the classes that I've TA'd for and taught at MATC actually is racial and ethnic minorities. So that is at the UW-Madison, one of the requirements is you have to have an ethnic studies requirement. And I would have students from all over campus, from the natural sciences and the social sciences and humanities in my classrooms. And I tell you, I feel really good about teaching that class because that class makes a difference in the types of citizens they are. And this is the type of stuff that is absolutely necessary to graduate from a world-class institution with these types of education along with your technical expertise. You have to have a public expertise and you have to be a critically engaged citizen. And these are the classes that are going to be on the chopping block. So I just wanted to make that point. And then I wanted to also bring back to Joe's point and make the connections between our comments and highlight or emphasize the proprietary school aspect and how much the budget, the public authority, all these proposals have no basis in what Wisconsin wants or what the people of Wisconsin actually need and require. This has no reflection of Wisconsin values and Wisconsin needs. This is all outside, being waged by outside money, like the Koch brothers and the Koch industries. These laws, whether you're talking about K-12, university, you're talking about school accountability, these are model laws from ALEC, American Legislative and Exchange Council. You can go online and you can see all their model bills and see that we are passing exact replicas of these bills. And so I just really wanted to emphasize Joe's point about it being switched, or the complete fabric of education and everything else public is being switched from something that benefits the greater public good to private industry. And this works at all levels. So I just think that's a really important, important point to make. So thank you, Joe.
All right, let me throw out something. A lot of the response to the proposed cuts has focused on the idea that we should try to tease out the potential economic impact of the cuts with the idea that one, they're counterproductive, but two, maybe that may be a way to reach Republican legislators around the state that these cuts might actually be harmful, at least from the perspective of the general economy. There are a number of comments to that effect made at the listening session that was held on Thursday. One young man on the faculty, I think in the English department, got up and said, wait a minute, we're totally overlooking the importance of the humanities here, as if they were of no economic value. And said, all the degree candidates need to have English, and I'm teaching remedial English to fourth-year students and even graduate students. And we can't expect them to do a job if they can't communicate. And that stimulated another person to get up who'd already testified from the business school in the accounting department and said, and I want to underline the fact that half of the program for our business school students are humanities programs, and they can't graduate without humanities. So would anyone like to comment on, first of all, the potential economic impact, which it may be too early to just tease out, but also the importance of the humanities?
I suppose as a history professor, I should argue that you can hang out, after you get done with a history major, you can hang a sign out that says, history is written on commission. Actually, we've managed in recent years, in order to increase our outreach in finding jobs both for our graduate students and our undergraduates, we've connected with a host of alumni who are extraordinarily successful all across America with University of Wisconsin history degrees. The retiring baseball commissioner has a degree from my department and is returning home to write his memoirs up the hall from him. Bless him. So, and it's true with English degrees. I think one of the points you made is that employers are not simply interested in skill-oriented degrees. Sometimes they are, but they also like to see students, both graduate and undergraduate students, have a diversity of knowledge to be able to handle the world market, being able to move across the country and across the world and interact with people. If you're going to place salespeople in the Middle East, or if you're going to place them in Eastern Europe or in Asia, you want them to be more than simply skill-oriented people. You want them to be educated people who have a sense of what the world is about, have a reference in their head to the host of all kinds of information. My department now is one of the leading departments in Asian history. Our students come away with a knowledge of what is probably going to be, at least for the next half century, the most important market in the world. That kind of knowledge is extremely useful. Having said all that market-oriented, I think there's another reason why you go to college. And I'd like to say it's to grow up. There's so much stuff you learn in college that has nothing to do with a job. It has to do with those years between 18 and 22 and 23. It's all kinds of things. It's the social environment. It's the courses you take. It's growing up. And we need that. The notion that we're going to dump 18-year-olds out into the world and they're going to accomplish great. We always have favorite examples of entrepreneurs that dropped out. We've got a governor who dropped out, and he's accomplished a lot. I mean, we could make fun of Scott Walker, but he accomplished a lot. But he quit before he finished. He's hardly someone you would hold up as an example to undergraduates. Would you say to an undergraduate, our governor is running for president, you should drop out too? No, you wouldn't say that. You wouldn't say that at all. Nor would I think Scott say that. So we have to remember that those 4 years that they spend on our campus, they are unfortunately too expensive. But those 4 years that they spend on our campus and across the state is growing up. It's maturing. It's a whole cluster of ideas about how you handle the world, strategies for survival, being able to get along with people that you are just meeting for the first time and not entering that moment with prejudice. All those kinds of things make you a good person and a good citizen in America, someone who's a good voter and will accomplish things over their entire lifetime, not simply the first job they get. I get to monetize a college education and to reduce it to a set of skills is just plain silly. It's just foolish. That's not what going to college is simply about. It's about becoming a complete person and stepping into the world to do things the rest of your life. Being a good parent, being a good teacher, being a good neighbor, being a good citizen. That's what it's about.
On a different topic, it's been mentioned the cuts, $600 million or so over the past couple of biennium. One never hears about how we've adjusted at the university to those cuts. I'm an economist. I have maintained a strong interest in what's going on, but I have no idea of where these cuts have occurred. Have they really decimated the quality of undergraduate education? Nobody seems to know. Several years ago, Biddy Martin arranged for some outside consulting firm to come in and take a look at the way to be more efficient and so on. And as far as I know, we've never heard a report on the outcome of that effort. Have we saved millions of dollars? Are we more efficient? We really don't know. And I've asked around about how we've adapted to these cuts in the past. I've never found a very good answer. So I think a lot of the public says, well, $300 million more. You know, look, they digested $600 million, $300 million more. Maybe they can digest that equally well. So I think the university has really been very neglectful in trying to help the public understand how we have adapted, whether quality is decreased, and yet we talk about the Wisconsin experience, how great it is, and John reiterated that. Is it? We don't know. So I think that's a major shortcoming that makes the university very vulnerable, and I think creates an impression on the part of a lot of the public who do not live in Madison, hey, this may not be such a bad idea after all.
One of the things I think is lost in the discussion about faculty could put in more hours and work harder and we don't get the most out of our staff and administrators, this is something I was going to talk about, is that campuses are little cities. They have law enforcement, they have custodial staff, they have maintenance staff. One of the things that will be lost in this, and often this is an area in which the cuts happen because there are, you know, they're the workers. We're talking about the working class of our campus. The sidewalks get shoveled. The lights get changed. The railing that's broken gets fixed. The access for handicapped people is kept open in the winter when it's shoveled. That happens right away. There's security staff that roam the campus and make sure people are safe. The buildings get maintained. I taught in a third world. I've been at campuses where they don't take care of things. So I think one of the areas that our campuses are extraordinarily vulnerable about the simple amenities of life, safety, welfare on the campus.
So to speak to that point, and you're right, we haven't done a great job of making the case of how we've quote-unquote adapted. But I do think from the labor perspective, unions on campus, including the TAA, including United Faculty and Academic Staff, and other labor groups like the AFSCME locals on campus, have been trying to make this point that, I mean, it's we've adapted on the backs of workers on campus. So you look at the average state employee over the last 6 years, they lost an average of 22% in their wages. And their benefits are less. They're paying more for their health insurance, et cetera, et cetera. You look at graduate students. We were lucky because we fought for a raise in 2012, 2013. We got a little bit of a raise, but our wages are stagnant. And when you look at our peers, they do not compare. So it's come on the back of workers. It's come because we haven't been able to recruit the top talent, or we're losing our ability to do so. You guys are seeing that both at the faculty level and the graduate student level, and this is only going to get it's only going to get worse. So we do need to make a better plea to the public to show them what has already happened. Instead of just continuously bragging about being a world-class university, we really have to be open and honest about what has been happening over the last couple of years on our campus and how we've struggled to adopt. And it's a struggle. And I want to go back to an earlier point when we were talking about the benefit to employment and not just having, you know, skilled workers, and just to make sure that this point is also reiterated, that also a university is about knowledge production, and there is a lot of value in simple knowledge production for its own sake, and not just for its own sake, but the way in which it gets used, right? Part of the Wisconsin idea is that the knowledge that is produced on campuses is actually supposed to feed back into informing public policy so that we have smarter policies. We have really smart people running our civil agencies. And so it's partly that, but it's also, you know, look at UW Extension. They work to solve problems in local areas all over this state, like actual solve problems for everyday people in their everyday lives. And that knowledge production, that problem solving, is also just, you know, a valuable part of what we do.
I think one of the differences now compared to prior cuts is that in prior budget sessions, the university did have reserves like any good business entity would have. It keeps their bond rating high so that borrowing is economical, and it allows them to be able to move through transitions, and they could see that, so that they had those reserves to be able to help with the transition. My understanding is now those reserves are cut to the point where they no longer have sufficient reserves to be able to just find a glide path to the future of a $300 million biennial reduction in state funding.
But I know anecdotally, talking and working with students, that some of the impact is you can't take the classes. Where I could graduate in 3.5 or 4 years because of what I did as a high school student, students are having to go extra semesters, maybe an extra year. The cost of it is huge. And it's not just for our in-state or out-of-state. It's happening to the international students. We have several students living with us. But before they could even come to the university, they have to show that in their bank account, in their home states, they have a minimum of $50,000 American money. My students' parents are two elementary school teachers. They're willing to do this. But all of a sudden, they found out that she will have to take another semester. That's $13,000, all right? That's a huge impact of what one student, but multiply it with our graduate TAs and other. They're just not getting their degrees done because courses have been shortened, or you have to wait until the following year to get into that course, the progression. Those are some of the impacts that students really, really feel. They feel really angry. They're paying a huge percentage, and they're not getting what they should be getting. And they can't work outside of the university many times.
Okay. I'm sure that what you say is true. On the other hand, the time to graduation has been steadily declining for undergraduates over the last few years, which is a notable accomplishment. But your story you're telling to us, I think we all have heard similar stories. The public out there has not. And that, I think, is the problem. The press releases coming from the university talk about Professor X who gets this award or some new invention or whatever, you never hear about the impact of these cuts and how we've succeeded in adapting to them. Maybe it's a complicated story, and maybe it would make the university more vulnerable to tell what it's done, but I think it can be done, and it should be done.
You've been listening to a discussion on the effects of Governor Scott Walker's proposed state budget on the University of Wisconsin system. This is one of four talks sponsored by the Madison Institute titled The Wisconsin Budget Debacle. The other topics are K-12 public education, social services, and natural resources. All are available at our website at themadisoninstitute.org. The views expressed here are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the Madison Institute.